We'll return to St. Mark probably, you know, in a little while. But the texts that we have right now from Genesis are so absolutely basic that I thought we should really reflect on them. Today we have the second part of chapter 2. Yesterday we had this beautiful poetic description of God forming dirt and then breathing his own life into it so that man is, breathes like God. This is the way this text describes the transcendence of humans. Yeah, they're dirt. They are. Like the dogs and the cats and the tigers and the hippopotamuses and everything. But they breathe like God. Their very life principle they share with God. So they're above, beyond all that. And so, this author, after having talked about that, and talked about this mysterious place where these rivers come out, also talks about the fact God made a covenant with Adam. He gave him a command. All of this is yours, here. All of yours. But I give you a command. Do not take of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's all. Now, he didn't explain himself. He did warn him. He said, on the day you eat of it, you will die. And that's a command. And it's framed in the way some of the laws in Israel are framed. Makei ish vamet, mot yamut. If a man strikes another man and he dies, let him die the death. And he said to Adam, you see, on the day you eat of this, mot tamut. Earlier in the text, he had said that he took him and placed him. Those are words we use of Israel. He took them from Israel, and he placed them, and he gave them a covenant. What I'm trying to point out is the depth and the subtlety. He's analyzing sin here. First, he's talking about the dignity of man, but also the chosenness of man. Adam. Chosen. To breathe like God. You see, the text says, and he breathed in him. And man became a nefesh haya, a soul alive. That phrase, nefesh haya, comes nine times maybe in these two chapters. It's not that he's a soul alive. It's how he becomes a soul alive that makes him so marvelous. He becomes a soul of life because he breathes with God's breath. And then he gives him this covenant. Now the purpose of the covenant is to raise him to a level of trust. I'm not going to do that because God told me not to do it. That's enough. He created me. He gave me life. He gave me this garden. He speaks to me. And he doesn't. I won't do it. That's enough. That's love. And he failed. But the invitation was to a higher level of relationship, of love, and of trust. And then, in the text that follows, all the time in the first text, we have this phrase, and God saw Kitov, and it was good, or that it was good. Okay. Now, God says here, it is not good for the man to be alone. A daring thing. This is this mystic who edited and put these two traditions together. I'll make a Ezer Kenegedo. I'll make him a helper who corresponds to him. Ezer, helper. They translate a suitable partner and they kind of miss it a bit, I'm afraid. Whoever it is, we don't know the gender, anything about it, just Ezer Kenegedo. But we know this much, we who read the text now. Remember, this text is very early, but it's when the whole Old Testament was put together after the exile. The word Ezer comes 21 times in the Old Testament, and 17 of them apply to God. So this is a divine gift, a divine help. It's not, a helper like, Here I am, I'm home. You know, what time supper? Where's my slippers? I mean, that's not an easier. It's helping him be what he could not be without her. I say her because we know it's a she. He doesn't. So he makes all these animals. And Adam is clearly their lord. You are, you know, a tiger. You are a hippopotamus. You are an elephant. He sees with his mind who they are and what they are, and he names them. But there was no Ezer Kenegdo. This is this poet telling us nothing in creation is like man. Though he shares existence, he shares dirt, there's nothing. He still needs a helper to be what he can't be without her. What's that? A friend. Human beings need community. They're made for community. That's what this man is saying. You can pat the dog, you can feed the elephant, but you cannot have communio. And the woman is necessary for that. So there's a solitude about man, which is his greatness. He's like nothing else created in this world. But there's a solitude that needs to be filled. You see, by God and by a helper like himself. So he casts a deep sleep, a tardema, on Adam. And then this is all mystical. This is all poetic. But it's talking about reality. He took this rib. In other words, she doesn't come from the soil the way he does. She comes from him. And so, as the rabbis say, you see, he took her from his side, not from his head, that she's supposed to lord it over him, not from his feet, that he's supposed to lord it over her, but from his side, because they are to be together. And then he brings her to Adam. You know, brought her to the man. The rabbis again say, blessed is the man, you know, whose father-in-law is God. You know, he's bringing her, the bride, to the bridegroom. And for the first time in the whole Bible, man speaks. These are the first words of Adam in the Bible, right? This one at last is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. But she's more than that. You see. She breathes like God. She comes right from him. And so she shall be called Isha, woman. Because from out of her man, if you want to translate it that way, Isha, you see, out of her Ish, he's been called Adam up to now. With her presence, he gets a new name. He's Ish now, not just Adam. And so you see this, and now what? They can have communion. They can have relationship. They can have friendship. You see the notion that was popular, you know, that here's the man and here's the little woman. She compliments him. Well, the feminists were quite upset about that, and rightly so. So then, they compliment each other. No. When God makes a person, they're fine. They don't need the other person to make themselves a person. Then what's this relationship, you see? It's to form something that they could never form alone. Friendship. Love. Communion. Something greater than both of them. They can only form together. Do you see how this mystic understands human relating? And when this breaks down, this is the paradigm of all that is wrong in the world. No relationship. But that's for tomorrow, I suppose. This is why a man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife. And they start a new family. They become one flesh. Flesh is such a powerful, beautiful word in the Old Testament. I'll try to maybe explain it sometime. Basar. They become one reality, and from them comes new flesh, new humans, and they are related. They are related, you see, physically related. And now the challenge is to take that physical fact and make it a spiritual reality, a home. Now, this ran the risk of being totally destroyed by sin. But if you read chapter 5 of the letter to the Ephesians, you see that it's totally restored by the grace of Jesus Christ. Totally restored, huh? And then the last line, which is setting this text up for what starts on in the next chapter. They were both naked and they felt no shame with one another. There was totally unveiled communication. There was nothing to be ashamed of. Shame comes from sin. There's nothing to be ashamed of. Of course, all their drives were in order and that's all part of it, but no, it's not the unveiled communication. There was nothing to be ashamed of. Pope John Paul II has some beautiful lines on that, you know. Imagine, no subterfuge, no lie, no animosity, no, just unveiled communication. That's what the Lord restores in heaven. Now, the word for naked is, the plural is arumim. They were both arumim. And now as we start tomorrow, now the serpent, Hanahash, was the most arum of all the beasts which the Lord God made. Because this word arum, spelled slightly differently, can mean most astute, most clever, most. And so now you start to feel the presence of darkness. And the hash comes and he's arum. But he's not arum like they are. And the result of sin is now they see that they are arum. They're vulnerable. They need cover. They need protection. There's no longer unveiled communication. And what does God do? He covers them. The mercy of God. Do you see it?